Good morning. This is Mary, and I'll be reading selections from the Decatur Herald and Review from Monday, February 17th, 2025. Starting with an article from the front page. Here's what's open and closed on President's Day. Many Americans enjoy a day off on the third Monday of February every year. That's because it's President's Day, officially named Washington's birthday in honor of America's first president, George Washington. His actual birthday is February 22nd. The federal holiday has broadened to commemorate President Abraham Lincoln, who was born on February 12th. President's Day is also marked by discounts and sales at a variety of different retailers. This year, President's Day falls on Monday, February 17th. Here's what is open and closed on the holiday in 2025. Financial services. NASDAQ and the New York Stock Exchange will not be trading on Monday. Since President's Day is a federal banking holiday, most brick-and-mortar branches of banks will be closed. Online banking and ATM services will be available. Retail. Most big box retailers and grocery stores will be open, such as Walmart, Target, Kroger, and Costco. Make sure to check with local retailers and restaurants for their operating hours. Government agencies. Since it's a federal holiday, non-essential government offices at all levels will be closed. That includes DMVs, city halls, courthouses, and many libraries. Check your local library for sure. Postal services. The United States Postal Service will not be delivering mail on President's Day. UPS will be operating as normal, and FedEx will be open with modified services. Continuing with the front page, Millikan student struck in crosswalk, carried 50 feet on vehicle hood, police say. Decatur, a Millikan University student using a crosswalk outside the college was hit by a vehicle early Sunday and carried some 50 feet on its hood before falling off, police report. The 19-year-old woman was due to undergo a series of medical tests and scans, but appeared to have suffered no obvious serious injuries from her ordeal, according to Sergeant Jamie Hagemeyer with the Decatur Police Department. She had been alert and talking to officers, the sergeant added. The student was using a marked crosswalk in the 200 block of North Fairview Avenue just after midnight when the incident happened. Hagemeyer said the 57-year-old male driver was not intoxicated and not speeding. Conditions were icy out there, and he could not really stop that fast, she explained. The driver was cited on preliminary charges of failure to use due care and failure to yield to a pedestrian in a crosswalk. All preliminary charges are subject to review by the Office of the State's Attorney. Boy, two men shot at memorial in Decatur. Police investigate. By Tony Reed. Decatur. Three victims, including a 16-year-old boy, were injured Saturday evening when gunfire broke out in an event space in the 1100 block of North University Avenue, police report. Sergeant Jamie Hagemeyer with the Decatur Police Department listed the injured as the boy, who suffered a wound to his lower left side, and two men, aged 21 and 22. The 21-year-old was transported from scene to hospital with a graze wound to his head, said Hagemeyer. The 22-year-old was shot in the back of the left shoulder, and he showed up in hospital by himself, as did the 16-year-old. None of the wounds the victim sustained were life-threatening. The gunfire started at around 6:40 p.m., and Hagemeyer said more than 50 people had been present for what she described as a memorial event to honor someone who had died. But beyond that, she said, the police received little information about what had been going on before the shooting started. From what I gather, there was no disturbance. There was nothing to indicate a shooting would happen, and it just came out of nothing, Hagemeyer said. But it's hard to be sure, because nobody wanted to talk much to the police. Hagemeyer said it wasn't clear if there was one gunman, or more than one, and how many shots may have been fired. Anyone with information can reach police at 217-424-2734 or call Crime Stoppers at 217-423-8477. Cash rewards will be paid for information leading to an arrest. Ileana, VA, demolishing old buildings in Danville, looks to Champaign. By Kyla White. Of the more than 500,000 veterans across the state of Illinois who utilize Veterans Affairs, nearly 2,700 of them live in Vermilion County, according to a 2023 report by the VA. In light of concerns shared by some of those area veterans over the demolition of older buildings on Danville's Ileana VA Medical Center campus, as well as concerns about a possible move from Danville to Champaign-Urbana, the Danville Commercial News spoke with Dorilis Camacho-Torres, public affairs officer for the Danville VA Ileana Healthcare System, to get some answers. Question. Are there buildings being demolished at the Danville VA Medical Center? Some of the buildings on VA Ileana's campus have been around since before it was officially established in 1898, making it the oldest VA facility in the country. As part of its ongoing mission to ensure veterans receive timely, high-quality comprehensive health care in a safe environment, Torres said. VA Ileana is demolishing and removing some administrative buildings on the campus that have been unused for many years, in order to expand its community living center. This mission continues as we update and renovate in a way that preserves our historical legacy and improves accessibility and safety for veterans, Torres said. Question. Is the Danville VA closing and moving to Champaign-Urbana? The Danville VA Medical Center is not closing, according to Torres. They will, however, be expanding to Champaign-Urbana in the coming years in their efforts to provide high-quality care to veterans in West Central Illinois. VA Ileana is in the process of exploring options for expanding health care options to the veterans in the Champaign-Urbana communities, a statement from the organization said. The new clinic in Champaign-Urbana may not be open for years, according to Torres. This is probably going to take a few years. It is a lengthy process, Torres said. But that is separate from the medical center. That is just so we can have services to meet the needs of veterans in that area, Torres said. Our focus continues to be residential care, primary care, and mental health, Torres said. Illinois Mental Health, Substance Abuse, and Divisions would merge under Governor's Executive Order by Olivia Olander and Jeremy Gorner. The Illinois Department of Human Services Department lacked tasks with mental health and substance abuse would be combined under an executive order from Governor J.B. Pritzker, his office announced. The change is aimed at easing administrative burdens and improving accessibility to services for people who need help with both substance abuse and mental health, according to Pritzker's office and advocates. Under Pritzker's orders, the consolidation would take effect in July unless state legislators vote against it. Luke Tomshaw, executive director and founder of the rural health harm reduction organization Perfectly Flawed, said he thought the new office, expected to be called the Division of Behavioral Health and Recovery, would break down silos between the two divisions, which sometimes serve some of the same people. I think it's a good thing. How it gets rolled out, that is a whole other animal, Tumsha said. Many service providers interact with both the Division of Mental Health and the Division of Substance Abuse Prevention and Recovery, and 17 have grants with both divisions, according to the order. More than 60 community mental health centers are also licensed to provide services for substance abuse disorders, it said. The two divisions should not operate independently for both human reasons and logistical and administrative reasons, said State Representative Lindsay LaPointe, a Chicago Democrat and chair of the House Mental Health and Addiction Committee. The merger creates a real opportunity to reduce the red tape that providers and people in need face when they need state money and help, potentially improving the state's response for behavioral health issues, LaPointe said. The state reached out to community organizations in recent months as it planned the consolidation. Judd DeLoss, CEO of the Illinois Association for Behavioral Health, said he expressed some concerns early on that substance abuse disorders may not get as much of a focus or attention or staffing as the mental health side, and they're very unique. But the state has kept up a good dialogue on the issue and been adamant that the move is not a cost-cutting measure, he said. The proposed consolidation comes a few months after another administrative overhaul in state government, the creation of a new Development of Early Childhood. Pritzker led that effort, which the General Assembly passed last year. Tomsha said he's seen some improvement in how the state deals with substance abuse under Pritzker, and that he is all for more efficient systems, because I've seen a lot of red tape. Some national news. The price of eggs just hit an all-time high. Here's how the cost of everyday goods is changing, by Claire Mallon. While President Donald Trump has been in office less than a month, the costs of some consumer goods and services are trending up. At nearly $5 a dozen, the price of eggs just surpassed record highs, and while quite moderate in comparison, bread, electricity, gasoline, and natural gas also saw meager month-over-month increases, according to the latest data from the Consumer Price Index. But before you start reworking your budget to afford a dozen grade A, note that not all grocery prices are surging. In January, milk, oranges, tomatoes, and ground beef all saw a minimal decrease in cost, while the price of bananas and poultry remained more or less the same. While many of these month-over-month changes are not directly linked to the White House, they soon may be, with new tariffs and possible international trade wars sure to affect average prices at the grocery store and the pump. The Tribune is tracking these 11 everyday costs for Americans: eggs, milk, bread, bananas, oranges, tomatoes, chicken, ground beef, electricity, gasoline, and natural gas, and how they are changing with the new administration. This will update monthly using data from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. Here's a look at where things stand right now. Eggs. Egg prices don't appear to be going down anytime soon, thanks to a massive outbreak of bird flu. In January, the cost of eggs went up roughly 20% from the previous month. The average cost for a dozen large grade A eggs is now $4.95 nationwide, an all-time high, according to CPI data. But in Chicago area grocery stores and other large cities, egg prices exceed well above the national average, more than $7 a dozen at some locations. The last time prices soared to similar heights was in winter 2023, when eggs hit then record highs. Those prices, like this year's, were driven by a strain of avian influenza that led to supply shortages in stores and inflated costs for consumers. Milk. A gallon of fresh whole milk will set you back about $4.03 per gallon, according to the national average. That's down about 2% from December 2024. Prices have been hovering around $4 for the last 3 years or so, and haven't dipped below $3.50 since April 2021. Bread. Another pantry staple that saw a minimal increase month over month was bread. According to the national average, white bread was about $1.93 per pound in January. Though the price has only seen minimal changes in the last 12 months, the cost of bread remains higher than it was just about 2 or 3 years ago, and about 43% higher than it was 5 years ago. Bananas. One good that hasn't seen much fluctuation in recent years, bananas. The cost of bananas has remained reliably low, hovering at about 62 cents per pound as of January. Prices haven't changed by more than 5 cents in either direction, going back to 2018. Oranges. U.S. consumers will be happy to know the price of oranges is collapsing again, dropping more than 15% from October's record high. Though prices are higher than normal, by large, this trend matches the typical seasonality of the fruit market, with orange prices lowest in the winter months, then increasing throughout the spring and summer, and eventually peaking in September or October each year. The average cost per pound for navel oranges is $1.53 nationwide. Tomatoes. Though maybe not the first thing you think of when you hear the term staple food, tomatoes are an essential ingredient in all kinds of dishes, from pasta and pizza to soups, salads, and BLT sandwiches. In the U.S., the average price of field-grown tomatoes was $2.05 per pound as of January. While still well below the highs seen in the early 2000s and beginning of 2016, the average cost of tomatoes has been steadily increasing and is about 30 cents higher than the 20-year average. Chicken. Chicken prices have also been hit by bird flu, though not nearly as much as egg prices. The national average crested above $2 a pound for fresh whole chicken for the first time last year, and hit a record high of $2.08 in November. In January, the average price dipped slightly to $2.06 per pound. Ground beef. The price of ground beef has also been steadily trending upward, with the average price of 100% beef ground chuck, $5.50 per pound, as of last month. That's 40 cents more than it was this time last year, and a 34% change in 5 years. Still, the price came down about 1.4% from December, a difference of 8 cents. Electricity. In January, the average price of electricity nationwide was approximately 18 cents per kilowatt hour. While that average has remained more or less the same since May of last year, like the cost of many other goods and services, there's been a gradual increase in the price of electricity since 2020, a rate of roughly 1 cent per year. Gasoline. One place Americans have seen a bit of relief on their pocketbooks, the gas station. Despite a slight uptick from December to January, the cost of gasoline had been decreasing in recent months, with the average price per gallon of regular unleaded $3.21. The average price at the pump hasn't been that low since June 2021. Prices in Chicago, meanwhile, are about 12 cents higher, with the average price sitting at $3.33 per gallon, according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration. Natural gas, piped utility gas, or natural gas, is another expense that's dropped in cost from the historic highs observed 2 years ago. Average prices nationwide now sit at $1.55 per therm. While relatively lower than the price spikes from mid-2022 to early 2023, natural gas costs are almost 40 cents higher than the 20-year average and saw a slight increase month over month from December to January. Some state news. Illinois-Indiana political divide widens amid Trump 2.0 by Angie Lorgos. The Trump administration's surprise federal funding freeze met widespread condemnation in Illinois as state leaders scrambled to fight the spending pause that spurred chaos and confusion prior to being temporarily blocked by a federal judge minutes before it was set to go into effect January 28th. Governor J.B. Pritzker vowed that Illinois would stand against the newly inaugurated president's attempt to potentially halt trillions of dollars in federal financial assistance, calling the move unlawful and a threat to millions of residents statewide. What Donald Trump tried to do was illegal, Pritzker said during a press conference. Let's be clear, this is a demonstration of cruelty against people who depend on us. Yet just over the border in Indiana, the top state official praised the austerity measure, which was designed to root out progressive agendas, promote efficiency, and end wokeness through federal spending nationwide. Republican Governor Mike Braun thanked President Trump for his level of fiscal discipline, adding that the freeze was in line with values of Hoosiers, as well as the millions of Americans who elected the president to his second term. I applaud Donald Trump's direction to pause government spending, fulfilling his campaign promise to rein in out-of-control government, Braun said in a post on social media X. I am confident we will continue to deliver needed services to Hoosiers with efficiency, doing more with less. As the era of Trump 2.0 unfolds, the two neighboring states have taken disparate approaches to the whirlwind of change that's gripped American politics over the past few weeks. While Illinois has become the heart of a national resistance movement against the Trump agenda, top leaders in neighboring Indiana have largely embraced the platform, including federal moves to curb government spending, immigration crackdowns, rollbacks of LGBTQ initiatives, and attacks on diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. Illinois and Indiana as a whole are vastly different politically and culturally, a blue state and red state side by side in the center of the nation, separated by a 159-mile border with divergent laws on everything from reproductive rights to gun control to gender-affirming health care. Indiana's previous governors over the past decade, former President Mike Pence and more recently Eric Holcomb, have been known as staunch conservatives. But some Hoosiers say the freshly sworn-in governor and his administration are bringing a new era of Republican politics to Indiana, modeled after Trump and his MAGA contingent. The current governor, Mike Braun, is a whole different level of Republican from what the Governor Pence or Holcomb was, said the Reverend David Green Sr., president of the Concerned Clergy of Indianapolis. That ideology of President Trump, Braun is going to be doing at the state level. Braun did not return a request for comment. Green predicted that Trump-endorsed Braun and his team will be paving the way for the president's vision of America, and that Indiana will become a laboratory of sorts for Project 2025, a controversial conservative blueprint to drastically overhaul the federal government. Some of the stuff Trump is thinking about doing, Governor Braun will probably do first to test the waters here in Indiana, the pastor said. He's going to be out front. Indiana is going to lead in a lot of things you're going to see coming out of Project 2025. You're going to see Indiana doing it first, and then Trump. Andy Quinnell, the Republican Party treasurer for Lake County, Indiana, said he's pleased with the service of Trump and Braun so far. His Northwest Indiana county is in the Chicago metropolitan area, one of the state's few Democratic-leading pockets that favored Kamala Harris in November. Both the Trump administration and the Braun administration are doing exactly what we voted for them to do, Quinnell said. They have made the government more accountable for its actions and spending, something you never see in Illinois. Both Braun and Trump won decisive victories in Indiana in November. With more than 54% of the vote, Braun defeated Democrat Jennifer McCormack and Libertarian Don Rainwater. About 59% of Hoosier voters favored Trump in the past election, an increase from 2020 and 2016. Trump got nearly 44% of the votes in Illinois, with Harris, the Democratic vice president, winning more than 54%. While the nation might seem to have grown more politically polarized this past election, American citizens are actually decidedly and surprisingly moderate politically, particularly compared to their elected officials, said Sean Westwood, associate professor in the Department of Government at Dartmouth College and director of the Polarization Research Lab, an academic research group and research hub. The policies and politics of elected leaders are often more extreme than most of their constituents would prefer, because the primary system tends to produce a slate of candidates that are more polarized than the general electorate, Westwood said. Illinois and Indiana are two great examples where elected officials are taking the most extreme possible position, total rejection and total acceptance, despite the electorate in both states preferring a more moderate stance, he said. As for Trump, one of his first acts after his inauguration was signing an executive order to rename the Gulf of Mexico the Gulf of America. In a satirical video mocking the president, Pritzker earlier this month announced plans to rename Lake Michigan Lake Illinois because a great lake deserves to be named after a great state. The proclamation has been forwarded to Google to ensure the world's maps reflect this momentous change, the governor deadpanned during the recording. In contrast, Indiana Lieutenant Governor Micah Beckwith, an ultra-conservative pastor and podcaster, posted a video on X of the president proudly riding in Air Force One over the shores of his newly dubbed Gulf of America. Gulf of America, baby, Beckwith wrote on the social media site beside an emoji of the American flag. Donald Trump is off to one of the greatest starts in presidential history. While most legislative sessions in Indiana see a few immigration bills, lawmakers have filed roughly a dozen in the past 6 weeks. The volume of anti-immigration legislation that is being pushed at the federal and state level here in Indiana is just overwhelming, said Carolina Castorino, co-founder of the Alliance for Latino Migrant Advocacy in Indianapolis. We'll take a short break and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review from Monday, February 17th, 2025. Please stay tuned.